they wanted Jesus to touch them. I did a little research this past week on this idea of touching. I looked up the word touch in Mark, the Greek word is opto, and I looked at every other where Jesus touches someone. Interesting thing I found. Every other instance in the Gospel of Mark where Jesus touches someone, where this word is used, he's healing them. Could it be that these parents are bringing children to Jesus because they're unwell, because they're sick, because they're in need of healing? You know, that gives me a little different picture of what's going on here. I used to think, and this is probably based on pieces of art that I've seen, that kids were squeaky clean, with big, bright, healthy smiles, sitting around Jesus as he's having kind of, you know, children's church with them, right? As he's having a children's message with them, and they're in their Sunday best, and they look so nice, angelic almost. Now I've got a different picture. I'm picturing now a pediatrician's office, or a pediatric ER, where these kids are all lined up with dirty faces and runny noses. I'm picturing now kids who are gathered there with diarrhea and dirty diapers. I'm picturing now kids who are there nauseous with occasional interruptions that might be of a projectile nature. I'm picturing now kids who are there who are coughing and sneezing. And I'm imagining how the disciples feel about these kids coming close to Jesus, especially when you take into consideration the fact that 60% of these children will die by the age of 16. I can imagine the disciples thinking, you know, Jesus is a busy man. He's got more important things to do than to tend to you all. Children had a hard time of it in the first century. But I would go so far as to say I think children have a hard time of it today as well. I think, in fact, I would contend that children have a harder time of it today than when I was a kid. When I was a kid, if you wanted drugs, you went to the pharmacy. When I was a kid, Coke was a soft drink. When I was a kid, pot was something that my mom used on the kitchen stove. When I was a kid, crack was the sound of a baseball bat hitting a baseball. Not so much anymore. I was looking at some statistics recently and became quite alarmed. Did you know 1 in 6 American children live in poverty? 1 in 8 American children do not have health insurance, and 13 million American children are hungry, don't have enough food. You know, it's a dangerous place to be, America, that is, if you're a child. Did you know that in the U.S., according to the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, that children under age 15 are 16 times more likely to be murdered by a gun than 25 other industrialized nations in this world combined? Did you know that according to the Department of Health and Human Services, that 1 in 5 children has a mental health issue or a disorder? And that suicide now is the third leading cause of death for teenagers? Did you know that according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, that more than 2.5 million children are experiencing child abuse or neglect in their home? 2.5 million American children. Now you might think when it comes to child abuse, well, that's a private matter that happens in the home, and it's really out of our touch, right? But I think if we're thinking in that way, we're short-sighted. Because children who are abused will eventually grow up. And if you don't think that they're your problem today, once they grow up, they will become your problem. Did you know that lawyers who have been interviewed, who have worked on cases of inmates who are on death row, that 4 out of 5 inmates who are on death row were abused as children? This is not a private matter. This is a societal matter. And if compassion doesn't lead you to wanting to do something, perhaps self-interest ought to drive you to doing something. Because eventually, these people grow up. Eventually, these people become our leaders of our cities, of our states, of our nation, and yes, even of our congregation. If we were wise, we would do something. Now, I know I threw a lot of statistics at you, and I don't expect that you're going to remember these statistics, but if you put these statistics alongside the fact that in the schools of our children, there's more and more shootings happening within our schools, you see that our children these days have a very hard time of it. And you can begin to wonder, what does Jesus think of this? How does Jesus feel about the plight of children today? Well, we don't need to ask, do we? It's quite clear. In light of these statistics, in light of the social mores of Jesus' own generation, in light of his disciples trying to keep these children at bay, Jesus says, let the children come to me. It's interesting, our text tells us that Jesus was indignant. The word leads us to believe that Jesus was angry. Now, if you don't think that Jesus was ever angry, or the only time he was angry was when he was in the temple courts, here's another instance where he's angry. And when Jesus gets angry, which doesn't happen that often, we ought to pay attention. What raises Jesus' ire is when children are allowed to be treated in this way. When children are facing these kinds of risks, when there are not people, even God's own people, even we who are Christians, who are willing to do something about it. That makes him angry. Let the children come to me, he says, and do not hinder them. Now, you might say, who would hinder a child from coming to Jesus? None of us would hinder a child from coming to Jesus, because when we think of hindering, we think of something that's active, something that's conscious, something where we're actually deliberately obstructing someone from doing something. But let me posit that our hindering doesn't always necessarily have to be conscious or deliberate. It could be unconscious and passive, simply through neglect. By our doing nothing, we are in fact contributing to the problem. My friends, you have within our community. That's the good news. You have an opportunity. And the opportunity is this. You have an opportunity to be more generous than you have been in the past when it comes to what you are contributing to the life of this ministry, because this ministry has at its very core a passion for children and youth. And the more you are able to contribute toward that, the more we're able to help fix the issues that I've just laid out before you. I'm so glad that we have people in this congregation who are so interested in our children and our youth, who are committed to our children and youth. And I think if I were to ask for people to raise hands and ask you, how many of you have contributed in the past to children's ministry, either financially or through your volunteerism, I think I'd have a lot of show of hands. That's the past. What I'm calling for today is for us to think now about the future. How can we impact the future generations of our children in this community? Because if we continue to give at the levels at which we have been giving, our ability to reach and care for the children and youth in our area will be compromised. We are not giving at the levels we need to be giving. So as your pastor, I'm humbly asking you to think about what it is you are contributing to the life of this ministry so that we, as a ministry, can continue to reach the children and youth in our area. I know you care for the children. I know they're even a priority for you. I'm so glad that you provide ministry for them. Will you go further and continue to give at levels such that will continue to meet the needs of our future, of our children into the future? I want you to hear more about the ministries that are going on here and how your generosity has affected the changed lives. And I want you to hear for a moment how your generosity is right now currently affecting and changing the lives of both children and youth. I'm going to call upon Laura Schlieb. Laura's here this morning. She's got her children with her husband. She's going to talk a little bit about children's ministry. Welcome, Laura.
Good morning. I'm Laura Schlade. I am a preschool teacher here at the Preschool at First Lutheran, and I am also a member here along with my husband Matt and our two daughters, Lily, who is almost 7 and is in first grade, and Elise, who is almost 5 and is a lion here at the preschool. And one of the reasons that we first started coming to this church has to do with those blocks in the narthex. I don't know if you've seen them. There's a table over in the corner, over there by the stairs, and it's always covered with some kind of a toy. The toy changes periodically. When we first came to visit 4 years ago, it was blocks. And I remember our girls just being drawn to that like a magnet. They played there that first Sunday and every Sunday for the past 4 years. They also played there the time that we came to tour the preschool for the first time when we decided that that was going to be where we wanted our girls to start off their education was here in this building. And there's so much ministry happening in those blocks. Those blocks say right away that children are welcome here, that families are welcome here. I mean, I think every child that's ever come through these doors probably has played at those blocks. And I just think it's so amazing that there are children gathering there, there are families gathering there. People are connecting there, and God's love is being shared there. And that's just one example. This church does so many things to welcome children, to welcome families, to make children and families feel safe and comfortable and welcome. And I think that's because of your generosity of time and of finances and sharing your talents, volunteering. All of that is what makes this place so welcoming to children. And I think that the best possible way I can explain the impact is to tell a story that happened in our own family just last week. It was Ash Wednesday, and our girls were playing with some of the kids in the neighborhood, and Lily started to tell them that we were going to be coming to church that night to get ashes on their foreheads. And her friends asked why, and Elise, with no hesitation, said, "I know why. It's because God forgives our mistakes. God turns our mistakes into ashes." And it was so incredible to hear that answer come from her. And that's because of the people here. That's because that morning in chapel at preschool, Pastor John had said those words. And in her preschool class, her teachers had talked with her more about that. And when she comes to JAM, which is the evening Jesus and Music program, and she comes to Sunday school and at the children's message during worship, Terry is saying those words, volunteers are saying those words, and she knew those words. And she was able to share them with her friends in the neighborhood who didn't know. And not long after they stopped playing that day, I got a text from a neighborhood mom, and her daughter had gone home and told her what Elise had said, and she wanted to know if her family could come to church that night. And they did. They came and worshiped with us all for Ash Wednesday, and they were instantly comfortable here. Their son is a Dove at the preschool, and he knew just where to go. He was so comfortable coming into the sanctuary because he comes in here every week for chapel at preschool. And he saw Mrs. Beasley, the preschool director, worshiping here. And he immediately found Mr. Joel, who teaches music. And he loved watching him lead the music for worship that night. And so we all worshiped together that night. And then as we came up for communion and we came up to get the ashes on our foreheads, they of course first got their high five from Steve Sturm, which they look forward to every week. And then after communion, we sat down and Lily said, "Mom, Mrs. Mim, she said the blood of Christ shed for you, Lily." And I said, "Oh, how'd that make you feel?" And she said, "Well, she knew my name. Practically everyone here knows my name." And I can't tell you what that means to be in a community where they know it's children by name. Everyone here knows the children by name. And I think that everything that's done here, the Faith Formation Ministries of Sunday School, of JAM, of the preschool, the Confirmation and the Youth Ministries that Nels will talk about in just a minute, all of these ministries are changing lives. And it's because of your generosity that these ministries are happening. It's your generosity of tithing to pay for the salaries of the people that are doing these ministries. It pays for the building that makes this a gathering place where children and families come every day of the week. Every day there are children and families here. And it's your generosity of time that makes this a place where God and God's people will call children by name. And it's your generosity of love that makes this a community that changes lives. So I just really encourage you to look around today and see all the ways that this community intentionally welcomes children and seeks them out. The cards and the Bibles and the bulletins and the bags and the pews and the things that happen out in the narthex, the programming that happens, all of that makes this a place where children are valued. So I just pray that you'll continue to be generous in sharing your gifts and your time and your finances and all of that to support these ministries, because they truly change lives and they are growing, and that's such an amazing place to be. So now I'll invite Niles to come up and share a little bit more.
Good morning. My name is Nels Clark, and I've been at this church for my whole life. I am currently a youth leader as well. I've been baptized, confirmed, and lots of other stuff, gone through preschool, right here in this building. Throughout my time in confirmation and youth group, I was lucky to be encompassed by great volunteers, fantastic leaders, and friends. The overlying theme of what kept me and the others in my group coming back was that we were surrounded by people who really cared about us, which made some of the things that teens go through, as Pastor John had said, easier, especially when we have someone just to be there and to just listen to and talk to. One of the things that set my group apart was that we gained numbers after confirmation, which is not very common, but we know it's because of the leaders and openness and comfortability that we had in the community. It is because of this wonderful body of this church, as a child, youth, and adult, that we can come together to experience the amazing love shown by God. A few Sundays ago, Terry featured one of my favorite phrases that has made a home in my brain: God's work, our hands. My last mission trip as a youth just so happened to be the National Youth Gathering in New Orleans. As a last kind of hurrah of my age group, most of our core group decided to go. We had a fantastic time hanging out, being in another culture, and being in the presence with one another. And it truly was fun. But one of the monkey wrenches that was thrown in the whole event was the amount of rain. Of course, we're in Seattle, but funny how that happens. On our day of service at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, we all gathered and waited to go to our project site. The only problem was that some of the streets had flooded due to the amount of rain, and more rain was on the way. After walking around the suite for an hour, we finally heard that we could go, and that we had to make it kind of quick because more rain was on the way. When we got there, we hung out with some elementary kids, read them stories, colored, and just kind of hung out and went in community. We had to say a short goodbye as we were promptly shuffled onto the bus to avoid the downpour that was about to happen. But when we pulled up to the stadium and everyone piled out of the bus, we got our shirts that said, God's work, our hands. The next few days of the event, you could not find a single street corner which didn't have that shirt, which was an amazing impact the convention had on the community surrounding. After I graduated high school and started college at Shoreline Community College, I figured out which direction I wanted to go. I would study hard to go to a four-year school to help people. I wasn't sure which direction, but I was confident that there was enough need in the world that I could find some cause to help. After my freshman year, I went to Terry and asked if I could be her intern so that I could get a deeper look into what she does and some of the outreach and hopefully narrow down my interests. After a few challenges, like experiencing a few ideas and events that did not go as smoothly as preferred, I started to figure things out, and I realized that my failures were really just stepping stones and parts for me to grow. Now a few years, there have been multiple interns under Terry, and I graduated college. The last event of my internship was when we went to Tillamook in the summer, as always. In Tillamook, I received a gift that one of the people we had helped made. She painted a house on a rock from her yard. She gave them to us and said, since you have all worked so hard to make my house a home again, it's only fitting that you take a little piece of it back with you. That was one of the most important feelings that we remember, and it keeps the fire going to keep continuing to serve people. This year, we are blessed to have more youth going to Tillamook than seats in the shuttle. The community at FLRB is growing, and with that comes a greater reason for us to step in and use our gifts. I was lucky enough to go to just about every mission trip that was offered, and I've always looked forward to doing it. Not only could we create lasting memories that shaped our values and who we've become, but we could see the effect that had on others, which always made us strive to do more. Those mission trips helped grow our servant heart and instilled in us that we can make a difference and help others. To this day, some of my fondest memories come from youth group and trips across the state, country, and world.
Let's show our appreciation to Laura and Laura. Thank you both. Very proud of what they both had to share. Proud of Nels, of course, for the growth that I've been able to see in the 10 years I've been here in him. He mentioned that he was a summer intern here. Our youth program has had a number of summer interns. We weren't able to last year because of a budget shortfall. There wasn't enough resource for that. He mentioned, he didn't mention, but he might have mentioned that one of our interns, Wolfgang Watert, the first intern that was here when I was here, had a very special connection with Nels and kind of took Nels under his wing, I think, and they had a really good bond, so much so that they've asked Wolfgang to come back and perform his marriage this summer. So we're very thankful that Wolfgang will be coming back for that. We're hoping to get him to preach that same weekend here so that you'll all be able to see him. We haven't had interns for a while. We don't have an associate pastor. Again, this is because the giving levels aren't where they need to be. You can see how generosity affects ministry positively or negatively. Your generosity does change lives. So I want to encourage you that on March 18th, when we have our Pledge Sunday, that you consider making a contribution, a pledge, to the ministry of this church that will help us to have the kind of ministries that we want to have, that we're called to have, that Jesus would have us have, so that he's able to touch people and affect them the way he has in the past and the way we believe he wants to in the future. Let us now stand as we sing our next song.